Welcome to Earth Eats, a show of real food and green living. I'm Annie Corrigan.
And I'm Chef Daniel Orr.
Two ways to cook tomatoes on today's episode. First, a burst cherry tomato compote recipe that positively explodes with flavor. Then, a roasted salsa using garden fresh tomatillos. But first, here's Megan Meyer with a look at this week's news.
An Iowa egg producer has announced the voluntary recall of 380 million eggs affecting eight states due to a spike in reported salmonella-related illnesses. The eight states affected by the recall are California, Illinois, Missouri, Colorado, Nebraska, Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Iowa. The CDC traced many of the cases back to Wright County Egg, an egg producer based in Galt, Iowa. Wright County Egg's owner has been confronted in the past by health officials over poor or unsafe working conditions, environmental violations, harassing workers, and hiring illegal immigrants. And a U.S. District Court judge issued a ruling that overturned a USDA regulation allowing the planting of genetically modified Roundup Ready sugar beets. Environmental and food safety watchdogs filed the claim against the USDA. They believed it did not carefully consider environmental consequences when it first approved the genetically modified sugar beets 5 years ago. The ruling means that the USDA will now have to redo its environmental impact assessments, a process that could take until the spring of 2012. In the meantime, planting GM sugar beets is forbidden on U.S. farms, although this year's crop, since the plants are already in the ground, will be allowed to be harvested and sold as usual. Janet Poppendick, author of the book Free for All, Fixing School Food in America, joined Earth Eats again back in June for the Food in Bloom Conference in Bloomington, Indiana. In her interview with us, she discussed school lunch policy reform and history. Here is an excerpt from that interview where she explains how school lunches acquired so many of the empty calories and junk food seen today.
The thing with the nutrition requirements is they sound very simple to nutritionists. Nutritionists say, oh, that's not a rigorous standard. It's not hard. But for school food menu planners who are working within this very limited budget, if I say it's $2.68, the federal reimbursement for a free meal, or that the typical amount for a paid meal is $1.85 plus that 25-cent subsidy, then we're talking about schools having less than a dollar to spend on the actual food because there are labor costs and administrative costs and equipment maintenance costs and gas and electricity and have you. So it's not a lot of money for food. So you're trying to implement these nutrition standards within a very low budget. But there are two sets of nutrition standards, and sometimes they compete. There's the old set that goes back to World War II, and the government facing rationing wanted to know what's the lowest amount of protein, of calories, of calcium that people can get by on, a kind of how low can you go standard. So it's floors under particular nutrients. And then in the 1980s and 90s, when we began to realize that overconsumption was at the root of a lot of our health problems, then we came in with ceilings. So no more than 30% of calories from fat, for instance. And what happened in reality, it all sounded fine on paper, but in reality, if you move from whole milk to skim milk in order to eliminate a substantial chunk of calories from fat, then you found yourself falling through the calorie floor. So you needed to add calories back in, and many schools did that by offering sweetened flavored milks. So the advent of banana milk and strawberry milk and vanilla milk in school cafeterias is really to get back those calories that were lost when they went from 4% fat milk to 1% or skim milk. So a lot of good intentions that backfire. I should definitely say that the Institute of Medicine has come out with a set of recommendations for changing the school nutrition standards. I think they're very good. I think they will result in better school meals. I think we'll need a substantial transition period to implement them. It's not going to be easy for schools to do this, and I think we have to be prepared to invest more money. I don't think schools are going to be able to meet the IOM standards without a greater subsidy, a higher reimbursement rate to cover the costs.
You can hear more of Janet Poppendick's research in school food on our website, eartheats.org, where you can also learn more about the news stories heard in this podcast. Or get updates all week long by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/EarthEats. For Earth Eats, I'm Megan Meyer.
I stopped by the Bloomington Farmers Market one Saturday to talk to someone who grows and sells heirloom tomatoes.
My name is Bobby Boos, and I work with Life Certified Organic Farm. Today we have a variety of heirloom tomatoes. It's our first week for those. Some eggplants, cucumbers, potatoes, zucchinis, and we have a number of CSA shares. When you get a tomato these days, most of the time, it's a variety. There are just a few varieties out there, and they've been bred to be transported and to be uniform in size and shape. It used to be that there were hundreds of kinds of tomatoes, and some of those have been preserved. So, like, if you could see the tomatoes, you'd see some regular red ones out there, but you'd also see really flat and wrinkly purple ones, and giant tomatoes and little ones, and they have lots of different flavors. Some of them are real tangy, some of them are super sweet, some of them are thick and, you know, good for making sauces, and some of them are a little juicier. We're certified organic. We're not using any synthetic fertilizers or herbicides or pesticides. For us, that also means we do a lot of work, and so do many organic farms, to improve our soils and our perimeters. We encourage beneficial insects instead of, you know, even there are organic pesticides. But that still kills all the bugs, whereas we work really hard to grow flowers and plants that bring in the beneficials and get the right balance in our farm, in our fields. You know, the more nutrition we put in our soil, the more we get in our food.
Bobby Booth says she'll be selling tomatoes for another few weeks, so get some heirloom tomatoes while they're hot. Listen to her talk about their community-supported agriculture program on our website, eartheats.org. If you grow tomatoes like Chef Daniel Orr does, you need to use up that bounty somehow. Over the next couple weeks, we'll give you a number of ideas for how to use tomatoes in your cooking. In this recipe, we're using those little flavor bullets, the candy of the tomato family, cherry tomatoes.
Cherry tomatoes are another one of those volunteers in the garden. Every year they come back and they kind of make their own routine. We planted our tomato plants in June and July, but they grow really quickly. We've got all the different kinds. We've got some little tiny currant ones. We've got some pear-shaped ones. We've got the typical round Sweet 100 style. And each one of these tomatoes has a different flavor, different texture. Some are really nice for sauces. Others are great in soups and salads. We've got our cherry tomatoes as well as a couple heirloom varieties. Got our basil here, and what we're going to do is do some burst cherry tomatoes, and what that means is we're going to put some really hot oil in a pan, add the cherry tomatoes until the skins start to burst off of them, then we'll add the rest of the ingredients, and then you could use it for all kinds of things. You could use it on top of a toasted bread for kind of a crostini. You could throw it over pasta. You could serve it over some sautéed kale, but this is a nice way that you can use the summer bounty of cherry tomatoes. We are going to use some decent quality olive oil here. We're going to add our tomatoes. We're going to add some garlic. Now we're going to let that go until it gets a little toasty and brown. And you can see the skins of the tomatoes are starting to burst. We're going to add a little bit of lemon zest. Be careful with the smoke alarm going off.
Crisis averted. And we're back.
I'm just going to tear up the basil. You don't want to chop basil much because it bruises it. This way it retains more of its flavor. I'm going to toss that and then finish it with some Parmesan cheese. So you have this wonderful tomato compote. And I'm just going to pour that out onto this tart shell. Now you could use toast, you could use baguette. And that makes a perfect little starter for your next summer dinner party.
See photos of this beautiful dish on our website. You can also add photos of your dishes to our Flickr page. From eartheats.com, scroll down to the bottom right and click Add Your Photos. Now we're going to make a roasted salsa using ground cherries, better known as tomatillos. We picked some tomatillos straight from the garden for this recipe.
and they look kind of like Japanese lanterns here, you know?
They really do.
So they have this kind of papery husk on the outside, and you just kind of tear that off, and there you go. It's a tomatillo. Taste this. It's almost like a fruit. I mean,
but it's still fairly mild.
Yeah, a citrusy melon. And we've got several different varieties. Some of them kind of blush purple when they're really ripe, and they turn very light colored, and those are super sweet. So let's go in the kitchen and get these roasted up. Tomatillos sometimes have kind of a sticky residue on the outside of them, so just want to give that a rinse. I'm going to chop up some onions. Okay, I'm going to add my chili pepper. We're going to put a little lemon zest in this one. 4 or 5 cloves of garlic. And I'm going to toss that with just a couple tablespoons of olive oil. And what we're going to do different about this salsa is it's not going to be a raw salsa. We're going to roast these vegetables off, get them a little caramelized. And that's also going to evaporate some of the moisture in the onions and the tomatillos, which will make the sauce a little bit thicker and give it great flavor. So now it's got nice and caramelized. You can kind of see that it's cooked down a little bit. And we're going to take this and put it in the food processor. So I've got probably about a cup of basil here. I'm going to add another toe of raw garlic. And we're going to pulse this. That's pretty good. I'm going to add a little bit of lemon juice to it.
At this point, you can also add some raw vegetables to give this salsa a nice crunch. If you're interested in canning your tomatoes, check out Barb Schaller's recipe for spiced tomato jam. That's on our website. Make sure to listen next week for even more tomato recipe ideas as well. And we're working on a special salsa episode of Earth Eats featuring some award-winning recipes and a great idea for livening up store-bought salsa. To make sure you don't miss a single episode of Earth Eats, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Just search for Earth Eats.
Support for Earth Eats comes from Blooming Foods Market and Deli. Information at bloomingfoods.coop.
Production support also comes from goodsforcooks.com. Online at goodsforcooks.com.
Earth Eats is a production of WFIU Public Media. Thanks for listening. I'm Chef Daniel Orr.
And I'm Annie Corrigan. See you next time.